She was going to talk about the idea that single, as she's been hearing it, has been posited as the opposite of being married. That to be single is simply to not be married. And she feels like there's a immense gray area between being married and being single, and here she comes. There's this gray area in between, that there are relationships that you can be involved in where you might still look single, but in fact you are going through versions of commitment, or in fact maybe committed but not married, because there are people who just are not interested in getting involved in the institution of marriage, or for whom the institution of marriage is not a possibility. And so we were thinking that it might be important to open our minds to this other way of thinking about relationships, that it's not simply single on one hand versus married on the other hand, but there are single people who don't want to be involved in relationships, and single people who are involved in relationships, and there are married people who shouldn't be in relationships. No. Do you want to pick up her?
How far did you guess?
Not too far.
The total time of presentation should be limited to 10 minutes. The rest of it is for discussion.
Yes, ma'am. Well, that's just the initial question that we discussed, and because I had a reaction to the seeming, just the use of the word single. And what does that mean? Does single mean not married? Is that how we define it? Or is singleness a state in which one chooses right then at that point in time not to be involved in a relationship for whatever reason, but is focusing on themselves? Or are you a single person, and then the next phase would be the single person who is involved in a relationship, who has a primary relationship, a significant other, or whatever? And how do you define that term? If I don't like and I feel uncomfortable with the definition of single as not married, I think that that's way too easy of a distinction to make. And I just wondered if anybody else in the room was uncomfortable with that. It's sort of a defining a negative state, you know? and I don't like that kind of dynamic. So that was the question. I would not define myself then as single.
Well, what about people who are not interested in defining themselves according to their sexuality or sexual activity? Like maybe someone lives in community and they're not sexually active. They're in community. Are they single? I mean, they're committed to a group of people that they live with, and they make their dinners together and pool their money. And there are different ways of living that aren't defined by whether you're sexually active. Does single mean that you're, has it got something to do with your sexuality?
I would say no. Single, in the sense of single married, doesn't bother me so much as being, well, you're single, you're without a mate. I think that's the way I've always defined single, and that's never really fazed me in the same way it bothers Susan. It just doesn't bother me, and I've never looked at it as a negative.
Yeah, I look at singleness as being a choice, not something that I'm stuck in, or something that's a rut or an error. I mean, I feel that if I never get married, that's fine. If I do get married, that's fine too. So, I feel happy with being single, and I feel that I'm chosen to be in that whatever you try to.
Perfect. Times when our close partner and I have looked at each other and have said, well, we, as we have been, are more married than a lot of married people. We are really relating, interacting, everything richly, much more than a lot of married people that we know. So that makes it a little vague. Mm-hmm.
That's, I think that vagueness was what I was trying to get.
Mm-hmm. I think I feel more negative connotation if someone asks me, are you single and available? I always feel like, wait a minute.
Now available at a bookstore.
Check me out the library. I think when someone asks if I'm available, I feel much more negative than if someone asks me if I'm single.
Mm-hmm. Of course, what we've been relating to so far is our single, being single in relation to our activities within our church and our families. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're almost dealing in a whole different area, in a sense, when we started on this subject. And that's why I was, you know, saying that didn't bother me one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. I prefer to think of myself as a person and not in either state.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's funny, I'm married and I prefer to think of myself as a person too.
Well, because I think, I mean, it's sort of a reaction to marriage chauvinism, I guess, is what I'm having. So you know what it is. That there's married people and then there's people who aren't, and we call those people single. And I think I think there's a more richness in the range of reality there, and we should celebrate it.
Yeah, and I think the idea that Ingrid was pointing to is that perhaps if what we're doing in relationships is being intimate with others or finding a way of caring for others and being cared for, people can do that in friendships, also in extended family. You don't need necessarily to have an intimate relationship, though, you know, in general, people see that as a norm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not sure what I'm doing up here, but
not single.
Right. After a full garlic meal, let's talk about intimacy. But, one of the things we thought we might kind of explore in this sort of three-stage process is talking about the hardest times in the whole issue of relationships tearing and mending. Actually, I understood the title to be torn and mended, as in past tense, already through. But the question of a little bit of which do we find more challenging for us, to be in the relationship or to be sort of not in a relationship, or at least one of intimacy. And where do we kind of find our security? Is it when we're in the relationship? Or do we actually feel a little more sense of security or a sense of control when we're just not in one altogether? And talking about the difference between those two states or experiences. Which maybe even go to take a little further might be to explore in the torn and mended state, do we find ourselves kind of withdrawing into a monastic type of life, or do we kind of find ourselves more seduced into another love relationship before learning all that we can from the pain of the other experience?
I wonder if a lot of that choice might be sort of governed by how much you're defined by your relationships rather than by your own self, as self. Because people who have, a string of bad relationships, and relationships that fall apart, usually learn sometime or another along the way that it's their problem. You know, that there's something that they have to solve within themselves before they can have a successful, whatever you define that as, relationship with somebody without falling to pieces all around you, you know, and everything crashing around you in pieces. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of it is definition of who I am before a relationship.
Well, I think if you put that much of your, you say security?
Perhaps.
Within the relationship, I don't know, I guess I just figured out a few years ago that my ultimate security comes from God. And that's why I know I was feeling insecure in relationships before, because it was like, when they did, and you know, the devastation was a lot. It seemed like it was a lot worse. But I think the security that I found now is with God, and it doesn't have. If there is a breakup or whatever, I don't think it's as devastating in that particular case.
So the hardest thing for you would be then not being out of a relationship, but perhaps being in a relationship. Because out of a relationship you find your dependence on God more reinforced, and that's comforting.
Yeah, I don't know what would be the hardest thing. That's hard for me to say. Because I feel comfortable in both states.
So both states are you feel a sense of God in both states.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have.
Frequently people do feel either greater insecurity or greater malaise or something in one or the other. You know, either in a relationship it's like, ooh, uh-oh, or out of a relationship. Don't quite feel right. Do any of you feel a particular that you feel safer or a little bit more at ease, either together or apart?
Depends on which stage
of the relationship.
Yeah, it depends on. I feel more at ease when the relationship has ended. If that relationship is really soured, or I feel more, you know, but I feel at ease during a good part of that relationship, too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I feel more at ease alone, a lot like you, Bob. But in a relationship, I'm a little less easy, but I welcome the challenge of it. And I noticed the last one that ended for me, I was right there. I just wanted to work things out with this really difficult situation. And when the challenge was over, I was frustrated because I wanted to still keep at it. But then when it was completely over and I knew it was completely over, the calm set in again. I returned to an even keel.
I think I identified with Dawn, and that I had two marriages and both ended tragically. And yet I was very secure in the marriages. I really enjoyed marriage. I liked that challenge, that feeling of, and the feeling of the security of being loved and cared for. And I missed that. But then when it was all over, then I was sort of like you, there's that relief also after a while. But I think it took me quite a while to get to that. I still missed it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But then I again relied on God too a great deal. And he has been the friend. He is the friend. He's the one that makes it possible to go on, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Into any relationship or whatever you're going to do. Now I can go either way, but it wouldn't be the same. I would never go into either one again. I mean, I'd go in a new person because I waited longer. I waited longer too. I think the biggest danger is maybe going into, especially in after marriage, after a death or a divorce. I think there the biggest danger is of going back too fast. Mm-hmm. I think it's the liberty of a relationship, maybe. I don't know. I think you can jump a little faster back and forth. but I think you can. I think it's not quite as tragic as the fact that a divorce or marriage leaves you so devastated, or that you have to find out what it was that made that fail. Mm. And then you do want to know that. Where were you involved? What was the involvement? How have you changed? Mm-hmm. Because I think if I went into another marriage, it'd be entirely different then. Mm-hmm. Maybe not. But I would be able better than I could have had I gone in right after the death or right after the divorce. Because then I'd go back to the very same thing probably as I could.
So there needs to be some time.
Yeah, the worst class interest would say 2 years. It should be the minimum.
Huh.
But I don't know. That's, you know, but it's better.
There's a established time length that someone made. That's good to know.
It's 5 years for a man and 3 for a woman.
Three.
No, I'm being facetious.
You were talking to people.
The most discomfort, perhaps. Well, you know what I'd like to think about is one of the transition stages. We've been focusing perhaps more, perhaps not because we've defined it as such, but on the breaking up and the painful side. What I'd like to look at is the loving side, the getting into relationships, the perhaps the exhilaration side or the joyful side. And I'd like to ask if you can remember from whom or when or where you learned how to love. Or how you learned how to love. What, was it a process, or was there a person? Was it your family of origin, father or your mother or your sisters or brothers? Or was it a lover? Was it someone you married and stayed with for a while who taught you that? Or did you learn it on television? I mean, did you learn it from a book? But do some of you feel like you haven't learned it?
I think it's hard for me to define where I learned it. I think I certainly gained a lot of what I learned, I suppose, from my parents, because they have had a good marriage, and I suppose I learned what commitment was all about from them first. That's what all I can think of.
Well, loving, I suppose, loving and commitment are, there's something similar in them. Is there a difference? I mean, what does it mean to learn how to love somebody? Can you learn how to love somebody? What do you think, Phyllis?
Phyllis isn't going to say anymore for a while. Let's see. What do I think the difference between loving?
Well, I'm just trying to figure out what it means to learn how to be in relationships, or what it means.
Well, my first relationship was, you know, girls and all this stuff. But it was terrible. I mean, it wasn't a good relationship. It was really bad. Hmm. In many ways. But I thought it was a very loving relationship. And a very loving husband in many ways. Also, you know, loved other people, which wasn't so good. You know, that's a problem, though. Sometimes you have a husband that loves you. He also is maybe out here someplace. Yeah, that can happen. But I think my real loving, my learning to love, maybe came from my second. I loved before they all met. I think my learning to love came from my second husband. And I can kind of remember from his service the thing that was said, that he loved, he gave more of himself, of his love to us. He loved me, he married me with a daughter. And he gave a tremendous amount of love to us. And it said that he hadn't given us, what he maybe hadn't given us, the material gifts weren't important, but what he had left with us was his love.
Mm-hmm.
And the values in life.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose from him I learned the real meaning of real lasting love.
Mm-hmm.
And that lasting love that I had after continued after he died.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps to a point even yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I know I'm kind of trying. He wouldn't have wanted me to keep hanging on.
Mm-hmm.
But I would always love him. But it would be a different relationship, I mean. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was simple, a simple thing, just a simple thing of caring.
So his caring for you taught you something?
Yeah, his simple caring and the simple values, mm-hmm. and his simplicity. You know, he wasn't concerned about material things, but he mm-hmm. very important family mm-hmm. and commitment and that we love one another.
That's what, so how old were you when that happened?
45.
That's amazing. That's great.
I was married first to 35 and I was married second to
40. Yeah. Uh-huh.
But it was a really good marriage. And even through death and illness, it was mm-hmm. good. Committed. Great yeah. commitment. It's scary all about you not getting married. Single people, but now I'm through. Amen.
I feel like a big part of my learning about radical love, real love, is I spent so little of my life in relationship that I don't think it's come from that as much as, well, a good parental example of commitment, and also from a married couple friend of mine who showed me a lot, too. We were close together for some years. But it's the biblical example, the forgiveness, and the radical acceptance of my friend for who they are, not only acceptance but celebration of them. That's for all of my friends, and that goes for a mate, and that's all it's been for me.
I think I learned most of what I know about loving and being a lover, and from three particular friendships that I have had since I was 14, on the level of every day. I mean, these three other women and myself have seen each other almost every day. We went to high school, college, and all of spent most of our time since then together. We've lived in the same neighborhood. People who know us say about us that we are more than lovers, more than sisters, more than friends, just because of that kind of long-term constant commitment that we've had to each other. And it's very interesting that all of our relationships, that our significant other relationships that we get involved in, always have some sort of referent to this group of four people who are so tightly bound together and yet also so completely confident and loving with each other. So that, which raises a question that I would like to bring up, which is that the model of relationship and singleness and lovingness, togetherness, can be expanded in a way that you, you know, it's not just this one-on-one. You know, I sort of bristle also a little bit at using the dynamic of there's a relationship and then there's an intimate relationship. Now, if that intimate relationship means sexual, say that. But the most intimate and most challenging and most difficult and most loving relationships that I have in my life are with these. That are these four 22-year-old everyday struggles that I've been going through.
That's wonderful.
How much do you rely, or have you, or maybe not all, on their, I don't know if approval is the right word, or how much of a factor in your relationship, your significant other relationships, have those three friends been, as far as a peer?
Most. More often than not, the significant other relationships become, I mean, there is a level of testing, no question. I mean, that's no question. We say to each other all the time, you know, that there's no more judgmental people in our lives than each other. And we stick right out, you know, I think that person's a jerk or whatever. But, but it's also true that every kind of significant other relationship has ended in my life, or for any of these other people, it's, you know, there's home, and it's a kind of a home that's not just, oh, I have my friends. It's like, you know, soft pillows, that are there to catch you when you fall at any point in time, and in some way almost more valuable than a significant other relationship, so that the continuance of that community in my life almost takes on a primary necessity for me. And I just throw that out there as a way that I have really learned how hard it is to love strongly and firmly over a long period of time and in community.
Mm-hmm. I think it is a continuing process too, that you keep learning from different people. I'm learning that a lot of relationships I had that I thought were love relationships were not. Hmm. What now I think really should be a love relationship. Mm-hmm. And I think it takes a while sometimes to figure that out.
Mm-hmm. I think the courage to be willing to make mistakes or to take risks. Maybe that's an important part. Apart from, we've talked about love, we've talked about commitment, maybe risk is also an important part of this learning how to love business. To be willing to be wrong, you know? But yet to try things out.
I guess the bottom line, the word trust, that's what I see, the unconditionalness. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about those friendships. Mm-hmm. I see that equated to love, and that's a toughie, is, you know, getting to a point of, in any kind of relationship, the unconditional acceptance, that ties to the biblical stuff you were talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeff, you were talking about, I think just to reduce this to academic discussion, to quote one book, that's where I learned how to love. Is Paul took love, power, and justice. Anyway, he says that love doesn't exist without risk. That there's no such thing as love if there's no risk involved, because love is the act of transcending, is going beyond the risk, and moving into a willingness to enter a relationship with somebody in spite of the problems, in spite of the possibilities that it won't work. Mm-hmm. If there's no in spite of, if it's just completely easy and there's no risk involved, then that's not love. Mm-hmm. Then that's something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what we were saying a minute ago is that the hardest time for us is the time of risk. The hardest time is the time when we're in between, or there's some change happening. Because that's the time when we don't know where it's going, when it's a little bit out of control, time of pain.
It's not always.
No, it isn't.
No?
But in between times are the best times.
Oh yeah?
We did.
We
sure. Bells ring and the really.
I get up, I live my life. I enjoy my friends. Be in between a relationship.
Not in between relationships, but when relationships are moving in a different direction, when either people are nervous about them starting up or nervous about them winding down. But people are happy when they're in between relationships or happy when they're in relationships, is what I heard in response to the first question.
Maybe for me, winding down, not starting up.
But starting up is okay.
I think that's the most exciting times. And in fact, I will say that one of the real hesitancies I think that I find in really making a long-term commitment is very frankly that there's some kind of excitement in starting new relationships.
Yeah,
I don't think you guys get the wrong idea of what I do, but I just—I don't. No, I mean really, there is that kind of excitement and newness, and I remember having this long discussion with a close friend of mine as she was trying to decide whether she was going to get married or not, and I just visited she and her husband in New York about 3 months ago, and I said, Carol, I remember this conversation we had, and she said, oh, you know, it's been wonderful, but she was saying, she said, one of the things that I'm very conscious of is that there's this real excitement in meeting somebody and sort of the mystery of who they are and whether this will work out and what's going to happen here. And so there's anxiety about it, but there's real energy around that too. And I think in some ways it's the romance, when the romance is gone, that it's where you start having to deal with some of the real issues of relationship.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said that. Because I think that sometimes people do get, what's the word? They sort of freeze in a certain state because it's under control and they're just afraid kind of to move. But there is, generally people do respond with joy to the adventure of falling in love with.
Oh, it's an old line about falling in love and being in love are two very different things.
That's right. It reminds me of a song.
Yeah, what you say, Mary, is true. There's a whole lot of joy in it. I just find myself feeling like, let's get past this in love BS and get down to the real thing. There.
There you go.
Maybe we have two different types. what's your profile, Barry?
The romantic and the pragmatist.
Right.
Well, there's some truth. I mean, in more recently, doing some work with people who come from dysfunctional families or the whole adult children of alcoholics movement, there's some kind of cliques that go or cliches that go around about the fact that once people have kind of begun to look at some of their dysfunctional patterns in relationships, you know, they begin to ask the question, well, what is a healthy relationship? How am I going to know? How can I tell when I'm in one? And feeling kind of totally lost in that whole, you know, sea of not trusting your own judgment kind of thing again. And sometimes giving the advice about the fact that you'll know you're in a good one when it feels boring. And that's almost a positive sign that that some of that excitement, and it's probably a little bit too bit extreme, but.
So on the fireworks are not as good as
that. It's a little easier to perhaps stimulate a relationship than to kind of tone it down. And there's a lot of always constant chaos.
Is there a better word for boring? Like comfortable?
or stable, perhaps.
Yeah.
I like comfortable.
Constancy, maybe.
One of my former pastors, when she was giving a sermon one Sunday, she was talking about being a risk taker in relationships, and she was more relating it to her relationship with God, but she was referring to her relationship with her husband, and she was saying, when we first started going out, that I didn't know whether he was going to like the type of person I was. I was trying to put on a false front, and what she was relating to was that false front with God. But you know, the same thing could happen in any kind of relationship. Sometimes we start off that relationship putting on a false front, not wanting them to see who we really are inside, and that sometimes takes away from the relationship that we could possibly have with that person.
I think sometimes for myself, the idea of being vulnerable is far more terrifying than actually being vulnerable.
Yeah.
Right.
I agree, yeah. When I have been at my worst, you know, is, and I have allowed someone to see me, whatever, friend, lover, whatever, at my worst, my crummiest, and that, survive that. It may not be fun. Mm-hmm. But you survive that, and there's a deep one there. Mm-hmm. And then for future things, there's that, the trust is built, and there's that stable, that pillow is there then. Mm-hmm. I think, and particularly at that first time, but then more and more, because there's almost a reliance on that, and then you're allowed to open up and take those kind of risks. Because, you know, I can make a jerk of myself and be wrong with this person, and they'll still accept me, and I'll accept them.
That's what I was saying.
And I suppose learning that is a real important thing to learn. I think perhaps it's true that some people don't learn that so well. I'm trying to think if I've learned that. I don't know if I've even learned it. You know, that you can fail and really fail badly, and that's okay in a relationship because that's part of what it means to be growing or something. It's, I think, a fairly high level of awareness. And of acceptance, grace or something. Do you want to do your part, the thing about learning how to break up?
My
learning
part?
How to break up, yeah.
Go for it.
That was my part. Yeah, that was your third part.
Oh, that was the, okay. The, where this came from after having this discussion that we're all having, we had it sort of in miniature. In response to the question that Jackie asked earlier, which part is hardest, I said that it would be a very hard conversation for me to lead because I know which part's hardest for me. And that's being coming out of a relationship, breaking the quote unquote breaking up, and coming to that recognition of the fact of, oh my God, it's me and me again. You know? Eek. And the memory, the best memory I have of it was at the end of a relationship that took up 7.5 years in my life, that started when I was 19 and ended when I was, when I was 21 and ended when I was 29. When I woke up one day and realized I felt like I was 21. And I was like, 29, I thought I was really old. And it should feel like I was 21, but anyway. The feeling of having lost this part of my life in terms of my own relationship to myself, because you cut these deals when you're in a relationship with anybody, you know, you are it's a relationship, and so you're some of you, the parts of you that maybe kind of bristle on the other person, you hone the edges down a little bit. And you know, if that person doesn't really like you to interrupt in the middle of their conversations, you don't. You know, and all these little things that the compromise comes from, suddenly when you're hit with being back with yourself again, it's like this digging through this maze to try to remember who you with now. Wait a minute, was that me or was that me in the relationship? And I have I just wanted to throw that out as a concept of how you How do you return to that place? How do you see in there? It's very hard for me to see. It's only happened to me a couple times. It's very hard for me to see at the end of a long time, or even a very intense, doesn't have to be long, relationship, which parts of the contour were me and which parts of the relationship, what I have to take back and what I have to shed. And that's always very terrifying to me.
And it's more terrifying if you've been married a long time. It's you have to go back further. It's a long journey.
Mm-hmm. You want to talk about that for a minute?
You discover a lot of things about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's
so it's a very long, and nobody can help you on it. You have to make that one by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even coming to the point of finally saying, I need to get out of this relationship.
Well, I realize now that I wanted to get out of it from the very beginning, but of course I didn't because I'm a Christian and you just didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a long, hard time to find out that I don't think I'm a giving enough person to really be married. I don't think I there was so much in me that I held back, and I just don't think I have that much to give away. I have two beautiful daughters, and I. But I
would never have left the relationship. And I can tell you where I was driving on the road when all of a sudden, we'd been separated quite a while, and all of a sudden it just came like, it was a wonderful feeling, and I thought, I'm free. Mm-hmm. I am absolutely free, and it was a wonderful feeling. And then I felt very guilty in front of God, because he could see how I felt. And I felt guilty for wanting to be out of this relationship, because I knew you shouldn't be out of this relationship. And that was the hardest thing for me, for God to forgive me for feeling good about it. So I think I carried my divorce braids longer than most people, just because I didn't want to feel good about the fact that I felt bad about that.
Mm-hmm. So that really is a learning how to break up.
It's very hard to go back because you're not 21. I was 21 when I was married. I was not 21 anymore. Right. So I could never go back to that, but I had to go back to see all the things I wanted at that time before I got married. And it was hard to do, and it takes a long time. And
how'd
you get the harder it is.
How'd you get the courage to do it?
My husband left. Yeah. He found somebody a little younger, and he left. Which, as it turned out, it was very hard. It was exceedingly hard, exceedingly painful. But that was a rejection, and I don't think it was the love. I think it was the rejection. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, because that's part of picking up the pieces again. But as you said, to go back and find out who you are, and to really realize that how much of myself I kept back, and I kept a lot of myself. Mm-hmm.
And to extend that, it's also then, you know, having done that once, the almost a fear of, oh my God, if I end this relationship or this relationship ends, I'm going to have to do that again. It's, you know,
it's very... Perhaps you protect yourself and you figure, I only have this many more years left and there's all these things I want to do. Mm-hmm. And I just, even when I project romantically after a movie type thing, could I get married again? I just, you know, I would want it for 6 months. Or I figured out one time, 45 minutes a day when it was just to talk to somebody. But I mean, then I would like to bring the buzzer down